And welcome to the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm Phil Taylor. With me is Phil Conlon. How are you doing,
yes,
Phil?
Yes, good afternoon, Phil.
And we're going to talk about the upcoming anniversary of the victory in World War II. And there's going to be, I can tell you right at the top, there's going to be a demonstration or march, and I should call it a march, at 9 a.m. on May 9th. And it is going to be, this march is called by the Russian Congress of Canada, .org, by the way, if you want to check out their website. Everyone is welcome. And that's going to be at Bathurst and Steeles Avenue. And they will be marching down Bathurst and for about a half hour. And then they will return. And then they're going to go to Earl Bales Park at 4169 Bathurst. And we are going to be honoring the World War II veterans and Victory Day. Now, that'll, of course, be at the top of our program. We're going to talk to Svetlana Thomas about that. Later at 5:30, we will talk to Zafar Bengash, Crescent International, I always call him, crescent-online.net, and we want to find out about what's going on in Syria and the bombing of Yemen, and there's a lot of other questions we want to get into. But there's a very good piece today, just in terms of the concept of the piece, by Robert Fisk. I'm not a Fisk admirer, but he has written a good piece saying, who's bombing who? He's losing track. So many people are being bombed in the Middle East, and to what end is his question, I suppose. But he's that is going to be answered on our show by Zafar Bengash. But we're joined now by Svetlana Thomas. Are you there, Svetlana?
Yes, I am.
How are you?
I'm good. Thank you, Phil.
You're having a World War II victory.
I want to call it a celebration.
And it's going to be at Bathurst and Steeles at 9 o'clock on May the 9th. Tell us, first of all, it's being sponsored by the Russian Congress of Canada. What is the Russian Congress of Canada?
The Russian Congress of Canada is a non-profit volunteer organization that was established in November last year when a group of 10 like-minded people, with the blessing of the Reverend Father Vladimir, put their heads together and decided to form an organization as opposed to a virtual Facebook group. You know, there's always a place and a time for everything, and that was the right time for Russians when the unfortunate events in Ukraine actually brought us together, and we felt that the need to become a solid community in Canada.
Yeah.
And when I say, sorry.
No, you go, please go ahead.
Okay. And when I say Russians, I don't just mean Russian by nationality, but more by the spirit and identity, because we have people of different nationalities, including Ukrainian, Jewish, Armenian, and other immigrants from the former Soviet republics. The Congress really gained its momentum in January this year, just as we adopted our foundation documents and elected the National Council with Valentin Losev as the president. We started out in Toronto, but our goal is to draw people in from across Canada, thus the name, the Russian Congress of Canada. And so far, we have established connections with our compatriots from Ottawa, Montreal, Vancouver, and Calgary. The RCC doesn't have its focus on one particular area of activities, but rather is trying to encompass all that is important and valuable to us, and that includes education of our children, culture and traditions, especially when it comes to passing our traditions and history to the younger generations. It also includes politics, since we cannot stay indifferent to the crisis in Ukraine and to what's been happening in Canada, for that matter, in connection to the Ukraine.
Yes, I noticed that your website, and it's RussianCongressOfCanada.org, joined in the discussion of the exclusion of the pianist, Valentina.
That's correct.
And certainly all Canadians became interested in that, because it's a question of freedom of speech and also the right of artists to perform. And of course, it's Russian Congress of Canada.org. Now, My understanding is this has been something, say, I guess it began in 2012, and it's the label is the Immortal Regiment. What is the Immortal Regiment?
I'm just going to say a few things about it. Before I go to the Immortal Regiment, and forgive me if I sound too patriotic, but this is one of the most important and significant...
Nothing wrong with patriotism. Go ahead.
This is one of the most significant and important parts of the history of Russia, and I mean the Second World War. Mm-hmm. And we don't take it lightly, because when we grew up, our generation, when we grew up, we learned about the history of the Second World War not just from books, textbooks, and movies, but from real-life stories, having at least one family member being a participant of the war. For example, I lost my grandfather in 1942, but my husband's father served through the entire Leningrad siege, made it to Berlin, and was lucky to stay alive. And every person I know, my friends and their friends, were one way or another affected by the war. And on that note, on Saturday, May 9th, we're celebrating 70 years of victory over fascism. We begin our celebration as early as 9 o'clock in the morning with the procession of the so-called the Immortal Regiment, where we will be carrying enlarged signed photos of our family members who participated in the Second World War, attached to sticks, along with balloons, flags, and posters. Mm-hmm. This tradition has taken initiative and continues to grow in Russia. As unfortunate as it is, fewer and fewer of the war veterans remain alive every year, but mm-hmm. the memory lives and stays with us. Mm-hmm. As a matter of fact, in preparation for the 70th anniversary last year, two new websites were opened with a detailed data bank on the Second World War participants, and the information was released by the Russian Ministry of Defense. We all got really excited when we found our relatives, because before, a lot of us didn't really know some of the facts from their war biography. And again, as an example, I found where my grandfather was buried.
Now, for your family, that's a very important detail.
Many did not find their mom.
Yes, many didn't find their loved ones.
No. We call the Victory Day a celebration with tears in our eyes, because there is an element of happiness that the war put an end to the advancement of fascism. But there is also a huge moment of sadness, because the price of this victory was ridiculously high, and the scale of the mass atrocities and the human suffering were beyond imaginable. Of course, no one can tell us exactly how many people from the Soviet Union died in the Second World War, but the approximate number for today is between 26 and 27 million.
Yes.
Back to our procession, as I mentioned before, we're meeting at 9 o'clock in the morning on the southeast corner of Bathurst and Steeles, mm-hmm. right in front of the prize chopper. And then we proceed for half an hour south from Bathurst and half an hour back.
Mm-hmm. And people will be carrying photographs.
Yes, we will be carrying photographs. Mm-hmm. And for those who would like to participate in the procession, you can go to our website and get more information. And that's www.russiancongresscanada.org. Mm-hmm. And we have the information both in English and in Russian. And if you click on events, you will find it right there. And you can also find the information on our official Facebook pages, the Russian Congress of Canada. And again, we have our pages both in Russian and English.
Mm-hmm. And following that, you're going to go to Earl Bales Park, right?
Correct.
At 4169 Bathurst?
Exactly. The festivities will continue there, and they will continue all day from 11 o'clock in the morning to 5 o'clock in the evening. And then they will be followed by a gala night in Riviera Park Banquet Hall at 7 o'clock in the evening. And the entire program has been planned months in advance by an ad hoc committee with Irina Gromova at the head. And by the way, her grandfather carried a bullet in his body long after the war, until his last breath. I have to say that we're fortunate enough to have close to 60 war veterans from the Soviet Union who are still alive and who live in Canada right now.
That's very important. So there will be veterans in attendance.
Absolutely. Will be veterans there, but the remarkable part about this year's celebration is that the veterans will be wearing the military uniform made to look like the uniform from 1943.
I want to see that.
Yes.
Well, those were our allies. That is why Canada didn't get beaten and Britain didn't get beaten. It's because fascists were stopped by the Russians.
Exactly. And the uniform was sent to them all the way from Russia by the Ministry of Defense. And I believe that Canada was the only country who received this uniform. Mm-hmm. And just a few words about the day program. At 11 o'clock, we will begin our parade with the veterans, from not only from the Soviet Union, but from the allied countries, mm-hmm. the home front workers and survivors of the Leningrad siege and the Holocaust. Mm-hmm. And at 12 o'clock, the formal part of the celebration will begin, which will include greetings and congratulations by representatives of various state and municipal authorities and political parties and public organizations. Mm-hmm. And then between noon and 5, that's when we're going to have our fun, there will be a concert and dancing with the veterans. And people will actually have a chance to talk to them and also see the exhibition of their portraits and photographs.
I really hope that there's a good photo record. I'd love to see the pictures from that. I assume that RussianCongressCanada.org will make those available. It'd be great to see those pictures.
Absolutely, absolutely. We are really working on getting them ready. Well, the celebration will be for the entire family, including kids. And the kids will actually have a play zone. And there is a contest of children's art. And I believe the last day was yesterday, but we will see their work in the park. Mm-hmm. And another activity that is worth mentioning is the field kitchen. The intention is to reproduce the time when soldiers had their meals right on the battlefield, and they typically consisted of porridge, one kind or another, and whatever else was available at the time to add to the porridge. And that's what we will be doing.
People are going to share that meal, or they're going to, why?
No. We'll just have,
demonstration. A demonstration of it. Is that
well,
it?
Well, just a small, each of us will have a small portion of it. Uh-huh. Just very symbolically.
Just enough to make people say, I really don't want to be a soldier. Right?
Well, you never know. It might be good.
It could be, I suppose.
Yeah, it could be. And again, if you would like to get more information about the events for the celebration, you can go to www.victoryday70.com.
Mm-hmm. Now, I want to make sure I ask you, there will be, some people will have ribbons, or maybe all will, the orange black ribbon. Can you tell us what the significance of that is?
Sure. Everyone will be wearing the ribbon. These days you see a lot of them attached to cars, purses, and clothes, and it definitely draws attention and raises people's interest. We call it the St. George ribbon, and the reason why it is part of every celebration or protest associated with violence, because it is a symbol of our memory. It is to show people that we do not forget, we do remember. The modern interpretation of the colors on the ribbon is that the orange represents fire and the black represents smoke. But the history of the ribbon, however, goes all the way back to the 18th century, when Catherine the Great established the Order of St. George, which had a similar ribbon on it. And then there was a guard's ribbon in the Soviet Union, which looked almost like the St. George ribbon. Yeah. And it was given to the soldiers for their special merits and accomplishments. And finally, in 2005, the St. George ribbon became a permanent symbol of remembrance events. Mm. And in the end, I just want to add that living away from the place where you were born and grew up doesn't mean at all that we have to forget our history, our culture, and our traditions. Mm-hmm. On the contrary, I think that the more every community in Canada brings of their culture, the richer Canada will be, and as long as we respect and not oppose our differences.
Mm-hmm. No, it is such an important anniversary. Now sort of front page news. World War II is being discussed in a far more vivid way than it has in recent history.
Absolutely.
And the symbols and the ribbons and the photographs of veterans, it all contributes mightily to this. I absolutely agree with you. It is a time to mark the victory over fascism.
Absolutely.
Svetlana, we're very grateful that you took the time. Could just remind us again where to come and what will happen.
Okay. So at 9 o'clock in the morning, it is the corner of Steeles and Bathurst in front of the Price Chopper. Mm-hmm. And then at 11 o'clock, it is Earl Bales Park.
At 11 o'clock, Earl Bales.
At 11 o'clock, Earl Bales Park.
Yes.
And the information is www.RussianCongressCanada.org. That's for the Immortal Regiment at 9 o'clock. Mm-hmm. And for the rest of the events, it's www.VictoryDay70.com.
VictoryDay70.com.
VictoryDay70.
Victory Day 70.
That's correct.
Okay. Well, Svetlana, again, thank you very, very much. We wish you well and great success coming up on the 9th.
Well, thank you for having me on the show, and I really hope to see you there.
Good.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye. And you're listening to The Taylor Report, CIT 89.5 FM. And that is... I'll just make a comment about the dates. Some people say the 8th and 9th, and just to be clear about that, they signed the agreement at 11 o'clock at night in Germany, the surrender. And, of course, it was already the 9th in the East, so in Russia. So it's the 8-9. It's not there's no actual confusion. It's always the and that's why, of course, it's marked that way. Something also to remember is that up to the very last days, the Hitlerites were trying, they played little games. They tried to surrender to the West. They had a game. They wanted to surrender to the Americans and the British. And to the credit of the Allies, and this should be noted, the commander, Dwight Eisenhower, when they told him, we're here to sign this surrender, he said, no, you can't do that. You're going to have to sign with all of us present. You have to sign with the Soviets and ourselves. You're not going to surrender to us. The other thing they were very careful about was to make sure that the surrender came from the military people and the political people. They did not want to allow a game such as Hitler had played of saying, well, we didn't really surrender. You know, only one group, the politicians surrendered, but the army was ready to fight. And therefore, he started the theory of that we were stabbed in the back. And if you follow American politics, particularly, I mean, I certainly followed it, sometimes carrying a gun. But they have this favorite idea that Eisenhower sold everybody out. They wanted him to be a traitor, actually, to the Allied cause. And because he wasn't, he and anybody who were part of that agreement, the McCarthyites started to work on them, which was, frankly, was neo-fascist. The whole concept was to renege on the alliance that had defeated Hitler. And that debate goes on to this day. That little game is played. But they were very careful to dot the I's and cross the T's and not allow a trick of that kind. There were people, by the way, very ugly people in the British and American military establishment who wanted to do just that. They wanted to double-cross their opponents. I shouldn't say their opponents, their ally wanted double-cross. And one of them actually was General Patton. You remember Patton, who Richard Nixon watched the movie Patton 6 times before he bombed Cambodia to get himself in a mood. Of course, Hollywood gave him a phony hero to emulate. The real Patton was an ignorant SOB, far less talented than Scott the actor. You're listening to Taylor Report. You can write to us, Taylor at CIUT dot FM. And we're on the web, Taylor-Report. Heck, we're on Facebook, The Taylor Report. Facebook forward slash The Taylor Report. A different book list has got on May the 15th, that'll be a Friday at 7 o'clock at 746 Bathurst Street. The title of the meeting is Africa Called, Cuba Answered, Dr. Jose de Jesus Portilla Garcia. I'm going to call him Dr. Garcia. Will come on Friday, May 15th at 7 o'clock, and it has to do with the more than 400 Cubans who went to Liberia right into the teeth of the Ebola killer virus and worked to help save people. And of course, that news was not shared by the Americans, who they sent soldiers to surround Liberia to make sure they were going to be okay. Phil, you have an announcement about Betsatun.
Yes, there's a number of things happening in Betsatun. On Thursday, May the 7th, for 11 days, there's going to be an art exhibit called Passages 3, Like Flesh and Blood. And then next week, Wednesday the 13th, Hard Truths for Canada About Israel and Palestine. It is a book launch and talk with Professor Michael Kiefer, who examines the reality facing Palestine and the unequivocal support given by Canada under the Harper regime. And the following day, Coeur de Gold, Justice Denied from Colombia to El Salvador. That's Thursday the 14th at 7 p.m. And this is the film premiere with guest speakers. It's a series of short documentaries showcasing five pivotal cases of foreign-funded mining exploitation connected to Canadian investors. They're all directed by Monica Gutierrez. So that's Thursday the 14th at Betsatun at 7 p.m. And the earlier one... Hard Truths for Canada About Israel and Palestine, Wednesday the 13th at 7 p.m.
And that's 612 Markham.
612 Markham, Betsatun.
There you go. What a memory I've got when it shows up. As the Taylor Report, CAT 89.5 FM, I got to mention something about Baltimore and to put it in the Maryland context. During the American Civil War, one of the great songs of the Confederate Army was Maryland, My Maryland. And Phil, you might appreciate it. The tune was Tannenbaum. And it is, they roused the troops of the slave owners to fight using that song. Maryland was a slave state, but it had not joined the Confederacy, mainly because the Union Army was standing on top of them. It was kind of hard to vote for the Confederacy with that many soldiers around. But the rest of the South longed for them. That's why it was Maryland, My Maryland, come and join us. And the first line was, the tyrant's boot is on your shore, the tyrant being Abraham Lincoln. And they said, blah, 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 we know that you hate the northern scum. That's the state song of Maryland. This is the state song of Maryland today. That song is Maryland's state song. And if you want to hear it sung, it's horrible to report, but an American singer named Tennessee Ernie Ford, who had a very popular television show and all that, you can see him standing in front of a Confederate flag singing that song. So you want to know where Maryland gets all of us? Why Baltimore? Baltimore, of course, is also the home. People are going to get tired of hearing Phil say these things, but from John Wilkes Booth. And when President Lincoln was elected in 1860, and had in the spring, March, to go through Maryland to get to his job, he had to sneak through Baltimore because the assassins there had planned to kill him, and they had a very elaborate scheme to trap him and kill him. So he outsmarted them, fortunately. But eventually, Maryland got him. It was John Wilkes Booth of Maryland who did the deed. So that would help a little bit. My point about this is we need a cultural revolution in all of us, North America, but particularly the United States. Maryland has to get rid of that song. That song is the slave owner's song. And the residents of the South, the Southerners, the patriotic Southerners, were African Americans. They didn't betray the country. They never supported the slaveocracy. They are the South. And this song is a bloody insult, as they say. So if they want to, you know, clean up the police and get respect for Black Americans, you have to get rid of songs that celebrate slave ownership. pretty simple, I would think. But they can't bring themselves to do it because they're not haven't grown up yet. Anyway, that's you're listening to Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. And we will be talking in about 5 minutes, I think, with Zafar Ben-Gash, Crescent International. I want to mention, as it's, I inevitably feel I have to do, the Manny versus Money. I don't know if Phil saw that. I did not. But it had an odor to it. You know when a product has been on the shelf too long? You say, no. I mean, it might have been good 10 years ago, but that thing, woo, is that stale? And Manny said he had a sore shoulder. I think he's kind of rationalizing, but I think it's probably true in the sense that he's 37, the other guy is 39. You can't have a life as a fighter without being full of sores and aches and pains. And I know they're young, but those bodies are being beaten on for 20 years. So it was too bad. When I was a kid, my father would say, a good little man can't beat a good big man. So here you had two little men. So the bigger little man beat the littler little man. And why anybody would get excited to the point of $300 million worth of business to watch a guy whose skill is boxing. He's actually not much of a fighter in the sense that if you want to see a fight, he isn't there to give you a fight. He's there to win. I don't blame him. But they made it. I watched the hype for it, and it led into silly lying, like this Mr. Lampley, who's one of the promoters. I mean, he does publicity. Him and this other character. They said this is a fight that transcends sport. No, it doesn't. It's malarkey. It's one of the great fights, and then they listed the great fights. It was embarrassing. Probably the best-known early fight where people really wanted to see and that was similar in terms of style was it was a man named John L. Sullivan and with a tremendous knockout punch. And he was fighting a guy named Gentleman Jim Corbett. And note the Gentleman Jim. Gentleman Jim didn't like to get messed up. And he knew how to avoid a punch. So he beat John L. But everybody hated him. Everybody remembers John L. Nobody remembers Gentleman Jim. But this is Mayweather's fate. He's not an offensive fighter. He's a defensive fighter. And I agree with him. If you want to get in the ring with him, my guess is that between 135 and 147 pounds, you will not beat him. But really, boxing went the way of something a long time ago. Someone called me the other day and asked, well, what do you think? And I said, okay, if you can name three lightweights other than these two guys, I'll talk about boxing. But this is just a show of sorts, and it's sad. If you want to know a great fight that transcended boxing, it was when Jack Johnson, the black fighter, the first in history to be allowed to challenge a white champion, got in the ring with Jim Jeffries in Las Vegas. And when that fight ended with the victory of Jack Johnson, black men were lynched and shot. People were arrested. There were huge demonstrations in the black districts of American cities because it shattered the myth, the legend of white supremacy. And therefore, it was a huge setback. I understand that people don't like to see sports involved in, but you have to face it. They had a concept of white supremacy, and the way they proved it was not allowing blacks to compete. And so, thanks to Tommy Burns, a Canadian, he said, I don't draw the color line. I'll fight Jack Johnson. And Jack Johnson beat him rather easily. Then they said, well, wait a minute. We're not playing now. That's Tom Burns. He's a little guy. We got a big guy named Jim Jeffries, and we're going to bring him out of retirement. And he's going to, as the expression was, he's going to wipe the smile off Jack Johnson's face. Well, they fought. I think it was outside Reno. I said Las Vegas. I think it was Reno. Anyhow, Jack Johnson beat him very thoroughly. And I think that was the greatest moment, certainly in American sport, because it shattered the concept of white supremacy. It was tremendous. Jack Johnson, there ought to be a statue of him because he was the real deal. He's like Muhammad Ali, by the way, in terms of his rights. He exercised his rights, and he seemed to be from another planet. He didn't, the laws and all that stuff, they didn't scare him. That's the part that I think people need to know.